very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are now, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, 49ers Plus Minus, with my co-host. It is the one, the only, it's Matt Barros. You should just do the Shanahan thing. Just get up to the podium, pull out a piece of paper, and get, all right, guys, injuries. Then just go. Because with this team, it's always the story. It's a story every day. The story out of every game is who got hurt and how long are they going to be out for, and every other preceding day in between. It's, okay, did they practice? Are they going to play? How are they doing? Injuries, Matt Barros.
Well, the big news was that Deebo Samuel, in the hospital on Tuesday morning, was practicing like nothing had happened on Thursday. He was technically limited. You know, we're allowed to see the first portion of practice. He didn't look limited during that first portion. He's going through all the drills as normal. He was the first guy in the individual stuff. He was the first guy doing the receivers and quarterback stuff. He looked like he was full speed Deebo Samuel. I don't know if his stamina, I guess that's the real question. I mean, what is his lung capacity like after having a bout of pneumonia? But I'm just impressed. I'm wondering what kind of antibiotic he's on. And I'd like to have like a little vial of that in my medicine cabinet just in case something bad happens down the line, because he must be on some sort of wonder drug, because all signs are pointing to him playing on Sunday. George Kittle was back today. George Odom, the one guy who wasn't there and hasn't been for a while, is Juwan Jennings with that hip injury. So, I mean, if I had to guess right now, I'd say yes to Kittle and Deebo Samuel, no to Juwan Jennings versus the Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like Ricky Pearsall and Jacob Cowing. Right? I mean, they're going to need to play. They played last week with Ayuk and Deebo out and Jennings out. They're going to play some more. It's going to be just, we're going to see what they got. We're going to see what these rookies can do. They're going to need to make some catches. Cowboys are not the toughest defense in the world. I'm just looking up their stats. Oh, awful stats for this team, Barros. They're 3-3, but man, some hideous stats. What do you see as the kind of the 49ers emphasis points going into this one? We know they need to win it. I mean, we're coming off that loss to the Chiefs. They don't want to go in the break at 3-5. They win and the Seahawks lose to the Bills. 49ers could once again be in first place in the NFC West. Hard to believe, but this is the way that race is going. What are your points of emphasis? What do you think the 49ers are thinking about going to this Cowboys game?
Yeah, I think they're thinking about their running game. The Cowboys have not done well when it comes to stopping the run. The 49ers have been consistent. Even, you know, against the Chiefs, that was a down week. It was still better than any opponent had done against the Chiefs all season. So they know how to run the ball. Jordan Mason is still on the injury report with that that shoulder issue. It didn't seem to slow him down against Kansas City. I don't think it will on Sunday night either. So I expect a huge dose of Jordan Mason to sort of compensate for all that wide receiver issues that are going on right now. They got to get Cowing and Pearsall up to speed. Very hard to see that happening to the degree that they want it to in 1 week. I think your guy, Chris Conley, and Ricky Pearsall will be sort of the Ayuk replacements. I don't know what the split will be, but that makes the most sense. As far as that position, that's the big position moving forward. Who's going to be that guy who stretches the field, who kind of catches the deeper passes, who kind of loosens things up for everybody else? I would think that as the year goes on, that's more and more Pearsall. In this first game, the first game since the Ayuk injury, I would think, I don't know what the percentage split is going to be, but it's a two-man assignment between Conley and Pearsall, with Cowing getting, you know, what we all thought Cowing was going to get at the beginning of the season, which is like Ray McLeod like snaps. Maybe it's 10. with a screen pass thrown in, a jet sweep, a fake jet sweep, something to kind of get things going, because you know, the last few weeks it's been a pretty, for a Kyle Shanahan offense, it's been a pretty staid offense, and that contrast with what the Chiefs were doing and what the 49ers did and what they usually do was pretty stark on Sunday.
Yeah, no misdirection. There hasn't been really misdirection for less. You know, I keep saying it. I think Shanahan kind of adjusted the offense for Christian McCaffrey and hasn't adjusted it back. And you understand it. The guy changes what you can do, changes what you want to do, changes the way you think about your offense. Even a guy like Kyle Shanahan, you don't have him. It kind of startles you. But, you know, this is now going to be game 8 without Christian McCaffrey, assuming he's back maybe for game 9, game 10. But let's see a little different stuff in there. And, like, you know, you say run the ball. We know that's what Shanahan wants to do. You know that the Cowboys are incredibly vulnerable there. I always think big game run the ball, Deebo Samuel. But maybe that's one aspect. He probably couldn't go from pneumonia to be Mr. Touch the Ball 20 times. But you never know. Could this be Garendo then? Could this be a game where they really need 8 to 10 carries from Isaac Garendo and maybe break one?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it could be a big rookie game. I think Garendo and Cowing, I don't think it's any coincidence that they drafted a couple of sub 4-4 40 guys in this draft. They just haven't used them very much. They have to now. And maybe that's not a bad thing. I mean, I think you need to get these defenses going laterally. And that's what Cowing did. I mean, it was only a brief look that we got of him in that last preseason game, but he was running the ball horizontally just as well as he was vertically. I mean, really stretching the field and kind of being able to get to the sideline and then up the field. So, you know, he adds an element of excitement, an element of versatility that the team hasn't had to this point. And Garendo is getting a little bit better with every week. So that'll be a theme. I think it'll be a theme for the rest of the season, whether these offensive rookies can sort of do what the two defensive rookies, Malik Mustafa and Renardo Green, did in the first half of the season. And then Pooney, of course, is his own separate. I mean, Pooney should be in the running for Offensive Player of the Year if offensive linemen were ever even remotely considered for that award. But he's been Mr. Consistent. He's been good. They did a good job. This is not a storyline at all, but it warrants mentioning today that they did a good job against Chris Jones. He was a non-factor in this game. They treated Chris Jones like they usually have treated Aaron Donald over the years, where the whole offensive line's game plan is dedicated to one guy. And when they have that, they can handle business.
You meant offensive rookie of the year for Dominic Pooney, not
yeah. Sorry,
it's gonna go. You know what? There might be
Give them all the awards.
Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. There might be some other. Justin Jefferson. There might be some other people. But you made me laugh just thinking about that. That you are nominating Dominic Pooney for NFL offensive player of the year.
Hey, I'd give it to him. He's been that good.
That's a call. That's a hell of a column right there. That'll get some reads. On the Cowboys front, they got some injuries. Micah Parsons did not play in the previous two games. They get the bye week, and he's still not practicing, so I assume he's out. I think it's an ankle or something like that. That's a big deal. I mean, that's a huge deal. That guy really bugs the 49ers. Even when they've beaten him, the guy's been all over them. Any other major injuries, or how much do you think the loss of Parsons affects the Cowboys' defense?
Yeah, that's a big deal. I mean, you know, this is the second straight week the 49ers are facing a team coming off its bye. And there'll be two more games after this. Mm-hmm. The Seahawks and the Bills will be coming off their byes when they face the 49ers.
And Tampa, right, too. Also Tampa, I think.
Is it Tampa, too?
Okay. I think they're both coming off a bye, so they're not in a deficit. I think that's
Maybe that's it. My point is that the Chiefs were a very healthy team last week. The Cowboys are not nearly as healthy. They've got a lot more bodies on the practice participation report, with Micah Parsons being the top one. So, yeah, that's a break for the 49ers. I think 49ers fans and the 49ers themselves will say we could use one because they're going to be missing some bodies of their own.
Speaking of adding bodies or whatever, which way you will look at, there's been some trades the last few weeks. DeAndre Hopkins, the most recent one, traded from the Titans to the Chiefs. You know, our colleague David Lombardi, your former colleague, whatever, how you want to call that, mentioned him. Like, you know what? The Titans, obviously GM knows the 49ers. That could have been a conversation they had. You surprised on that one? You think the 49ers would have made a call on DeAndre Hopkins?
No, I mean, you can make an argument for wide receiver. They've got a lot of bodies at wide receiver. I think they want to see what Pearsall can do. You know, they don't think that they're going to be without Juwan Jennings for very long. You know, I don't know what the compensation was for DeAndre Hopkins.
Fifth, I think.
Yeah, I guess that's not a lot to give up. There are other wide receivers out there. Darius Slayton with the Giants. I mean, you would think that the feeder teams, the teams that are losing a player or trading away a player at the trade deadline, will be one of the bad teams. And there are a lot of them. You got the Giants, you got the Patriots, you got the Cleveland Browns, you got the Carolina Panthers. These are all teams that, you know, gee, it seems like they should be making a trade at this point. So my point is that there are a lot of options. And I would say wide receiver and defensive end are the two positions where there are the most options. And I would put defensive end for the 49ers above wide receiver in terms of need. And there's some names there. I mean, Za'Darius Smith on the Browns. He's a guy that he's up there in years, but he's been pretty consistently productive. He's a big bodied guy. He played in the Browns defense, which is very similar to the 49ers defense. There are other names, Aziz Ojulari on the Giants. He's a good pass rusher, young. So you get him, and then you get a younger guy in his mid-20s, and you don't have to go through this every year. Mm-hmm. You have some built-in depth if you get a 26-year-old, so that you're not having to, you know, shop for a defensive end at the trade deadline every year. And then there are other ones. Arden Key, for example, he's somebody that the 49ers really like. I don't think that he would cost very much. Tennessee's Titans aren't doing very, very well right now. He might be a guy that they could get back. They could even get Chase Young back. The Saints have two wins. And last year, the 49ers gave up a compensatory third round pick that they obtained in one of these kind of coaching hire cycles. They still have one next year. They could basically trade the same pick again for a half-season Chase Young rental if they wanted to go in that direction.
They just do it every year. Why don't they just do it? Get one of their guys hired, they get the compensation pick, and then they just use it and then trade Chase Young every year.
Getting a compensatory pick for Chase Young, too. That's the beauty of it. It's sort of like a self-sustaining cycle.
That's great. I mean, listen, Arden Key really sounds interesting to me just because we know it would be like a fifth or sixth round pick. And he played outside and inside for them, right? That's like they love that. The guys who are sturdy enough to play inside, but also potentially can get around the edge. They don't love those light guys. Dee Ford was like a 240-pound guy, but he was, had a special explosion before he got hurt. They don't normally like those guys. They want bigger guys, hold up the edge, and then the guys who can play, like Yetur Gross Matos, right? He's a guy who can play the edge and also can move inside. And so Arden Key, that would interest me.
Yeah.
Again, they know Rand Carthen, the GM. I don't know that Arden Key is somebody that the Titans believe is going to be there for a long term. Slide a sixth round that can move up to a fifth for Arden Key. There you go. You got yourself. I'm all right about this. I'm gonna steal that idea from you. That's the kind of guy that I think it's very likely they make a trade like that. I don't know if it's going to be that, but I can't see them going through the trade deadline, which is November 5th, without picking up one defensive lineman. I just hard to believe, given the injuries that they've suffered, the help they need on both inside and outside, but a guy who can help them both ways, that would almost be an ideal if you can get him for the right price.
think of the trades that John Lynch has made over the last 4 years, Jordan Willis from the Jets, Charles Omenihu from the Texans, Randy Gregory from the Broncos, and Chase Young last year from Washington. I mean, there's a theme here. And like I said, there's a lot of defensive linemen available. Another one that struck me as this makes a lot of sense, Dalvin Tomlinson from the Cleveland Browns, another Brown. So he's played in that Jim Schwartz system, which is very similar to the Chris Kocurek system. He's a defensive tackle. So if the 49ers decide that, okay, you know, losing Javon Hargrave, that's our biggest issue right now, he might make sense. But I do think that defensive end, you know, on Sunday, Sam Okwuonu, a good young developmental player. I'm not slamming Sam O, but he played 37 snaps, 51% of the total. So, you know, if Nick Bosa had to miss a couple of games, if Leonard Floyd had to miss a couple of games, Sam Okwuonu is your starting defensive end.
It tells you something about Robert Beal, by the way. It tells you a little about Robert Beal, right?
It tells you something about Robert Beal for sure. But both of those guys, Beal and Okwuonu, are developmental players. Yeah, you want them getting some snaps a game. You want them getting 10 snaps a game, not 37 snaps a game. Obviously, the Gross-Matos injury affects all this. I'm not exactly sure when he's coming back. I think it'll be maybe late next month. But, you know, at some point late next month becomes almost too late for this team. This is a position that they like to have, you know, capable bodies at. And right now they're thin. Makes a ton of sense to add somebody.
Just because we're on a podcast and I can say it here, there's two bad teams in the AFC who have very talented defensive linemen who have fit the 49ers system before, who are very big, very long-armed, went to the University of Oregon. Eric Armstead for the crappy Jacksonville Jaguars, DeForest Buckner for the crappy Indianapolis Colts. I know they're at big salaries, but, you know, they've paid a lot of their salaries already, and the 49ers were not going to pay that salary, but some of that's gone already. Matt Barros, could you see a move there for one of those guys?
I think they definitely should make a call to Trent Baalke, because it's Armstead and there's some other guys as well. I mean, the Jaguars might be having a fire sale at some point. That would be very interesting. After the 49ers went to Armstead, asked him to take a pay cut, he said no. They basically cut him. They were going to trade him to Houston for Malik Collins. That fell through at the last second. They end up letting him, you know, hit the market, and he goes to Jacksonville. Yeah, he'd be welcome back with open arms for sure. Buckner would. I mean, DeForest Buckner would really kind of energize everything. He'd energize the team. He'd energize the fan base. That would be something. I guess you can always come home. I guess that's the lesson.
Those guys. If you're 6'5",
DJ Jones as well. Yeah. He makes sense. He's on the final year of his deal. The only issue with DJ Jones is that the Broncos are suddenly pretty good, and they'll probably want to hold on to their guys.
They're like the number one defense in a lot of metrics, by the way. The Denver Broncos. Credit to them. Vance Joseph, man. Vance Joseph, former 49er assistant. I just threw the Buckner and Armstead thing out there just for fun. Just because I was thinking, look, what crappy teams out there might want to trade somebody? I'm like, wait a minute, there's two teams I can think of with familiar players who would sort of fit in this scheme. Anything else you would look for in trade deadline talk? I mean, if they lose, does they just not make a trade? Do they? I mean, we've talked about this. I don't know that they can. They're not a sell-off team anyway. They wouldn't be far out of the race. And they just don't have a lot to trade, right? They're guys that are valuable or have these massive contracts that would accelerate if you trade them. It's hard to think of the 49ers being anything but buyer's barrels.
Yeah, even standing pat, I would think, after John Lynch has set this precedent of making trades every year since 2019, and also a big one in 2017. I think you'll remember the guy they picked up.
Yeah. Very minor player.
My point is that precedent's been set. If they don't make a trade, isn't that sort of tantamount to, you know, I mean, this will absolutely be interpreted this way by, you know, certain segments of the internet, that the 49ers have given up. I mean, no trade, that means that it's a white flag. We don't think that we're going to make the playoffs this season. So there's almost pressure on Lynch and company to make a trade just for the sheer signal it sends that, you know, we think we're still in this. We got a shot. Doing so at 4-4 makes more sense than at 3-5. But I mean, as you and I have discussed, 3-5, as bad as that is, still not, you know, out of it by any stretch of the imagination. And you've got McCaffrey, you've got Dre Greenlaw, yada, yada, yada. We've been over it ad nauseum. But yeah, even if they lose to the Cowboys, I would not be surprised if they still made a trade at that point.
They got the picks, right? It's not like they're short of picks. They got these comp picks. They've got their, you know, the picks via the losing the coaching and the executives. They got the picks. So even though we know they hit on these fifth round picks, this is life in the NFL. If you can get somebody who can help you over a 9-game stretch for a fifth round pick, you'd probably do it. And they've done it every year. You're right. If they don't do it, go, whoa, what's John? You know, you wait there? You go on vacation a little early?
You giving up? You giving up on the season?
I don't think they would. And I don't think Kyle is into the mood of let's not improve our football team. I don't see the receiver. I see a defensive lineman, either and or inside guy. It just feels like what they're going to do. Anything else you got, Barros, going into this
beginning? Only that the Chase Young trade last year, the 49ers sent over one of those coaching/executive compensatory picks to Washington. They've got their very last one from the D'Amico Ryans, I guess it was Rand Carthon year, is coming up. So that's in stone. They're getting that no matter what. So that's tradable if they wanted to make a splash. I mean, that would be a good.
And what is that, a fourth or a fifth?
That's a late third.
Okay, it's a good pick. It's a good pick.
End of the third. Yeah, I mean, Chase Young caliber pick. So, you know, any of these defensive ends, certainly, I mean, that might be even more than what a Za'Darius Smith or a Calais Campbell or somebody like that is worth. I mean, your DeForest Buckner one, that's got me dreaming now of having DeForest Buckner, team captain, back in the locker room. That would be great.
Who is it? It would be Dobbs has that locker now, I think, right? You have to give up that locker because that's the DeForest Buckner end of that he turned over to McKivitz. No. Who was there the year? Oh, it was Ben Darnold. But who was the guy who was there before?
McGlinchey,
that's right. I'm just messing up my right tackles. I think DeForest would go ahead and grab that locker if he was back in here. I'm going to look up this salary. I'm going to look if that's possible. I don't know if they can do it with the Hargrave stuff. I know they've kind of accelerated the Hargrave money, right? They paid him up front a little bit more. But that's a good guy to have in a locker room. DeForest Buckner is a good – and he's still not old. Like he was like 26 when they traded him, I think. So
he did just come off of IR. So DeForest Buckner was as sturdy as they get. But this year he did have an injury.
I always say he never misses games. And then this season he's missing.
This season he did. And now all of a sudden the 49ers are reinterested in him, according to Tim Calacami. It's like, oh, he's injured? Oh, let's see.
Get him. Let's get him. He never will get hurt again. All right. Aggregate that one, everybody. That's me talking just for fun. But that's what Barros, when he says these things, he gets me thinking. This is what this podcast is all about.
Kawakami, /49ers should go after Buckner.
I don't mind saying that. That's fine. Aggregate that for sure. Barros, it's time to end this show. Okay. All right, everybody. Show for today.